from education to employment and everything in between. It's a clearinghouse for all things shale. It's the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier and Rusty Fender.
Good morning and welcome to the Shale Gas News. I'm Bill DeRozier and I am broadcasting from sunny Florida right now. I know D.C. is hating on me that he's stuck in Pennsylvania right now, but thanks to the magic of Skype and, of course, D.C. Taylor, the show will continue.
I'll be where you are in about another week or so there, Bill.
Yeah, I think our schedules line up that we'll be passing each other. I'll be flying home. You'll be driving down 95. I'll be flying over 95. So I'll wait for you.
Oh, yeah. Wait. Hey, there's Bill. Wait, there's something in the sky.
I don't even know what's going on with that. And that's not even going to be the focus of the day's show. But like The more I read about it, we shot down one Chinese balloon and then some kid's science project or something they keep saying. I don't know if it's conspiracy theories, but have you heard more on that?
No, I heard like the very end of a segment of the Brian Kilmeade show the other morning, Friday morning, and I just heard him making a crack at the end of the thing. It was like, yeah, you shot down somebody's hobby balloon. You owe them $11.
Yeah, because it was something I was reading. It's like, did we really need to shoot a $200,000 or a $50,000 missile from a $200 million plane to take down a $200 Hobby Lobby project.
Right.
So, who knows? I don't know. I can't keep up with it. So, yeah. I don't know. I find solace, at least, that they're tracking these things and going after them. So, you know, if they are bad, rather than take them down. So,
right. There's that.
Oh, craziness. Well, this is the Shale Gas News. There's not much going on right now because I've checked out for the week. As you know, I'm down here, Florida. My sister is getting married next month. So this week is the bachelorette party and the bridal shower, everything jammed into one weekend.
Right.
And, you know, my 30-second rant on that was I thought I was coming down to relax and enjoy myself, but it's been one nonstop trip to the airport to pick up another relative or to build this, like, balloon display or to go pick stuff up. It has not been very relaxing. So I'm looking forward to this trip or this weekend to be over so we can move back on to enjoying the Florida weather for a couple of days.
Very good.
All right, let's dive into shale gas news stories here. Biden declares war on oil and gas, and it hits home in West Texas Permian Basin. When President Biden openly advocates for phasing out oil and gas as primary energy generators in the United States, he appears to be attacking West Texas and Texas in general, and the Permian Basin being the largest play in the world when it comes to oil and natural gas right now. The IPAA, the Independent Petroleum Association of America, takes offense to this, and their board chair, Stephen Pruitt, also the president and CEO of Elevation Resources based in Midland, said local oil and gas producers can no longer rely on banks to get needed loans or on the government to proactively reduce regulation, speed up permitting, things like that, that we discuss on the show all the time. He further continues that it's a whole new game. And under the Biden administration, Pruitt said during his witness testimony that noting that 2 to 3 years ago, there were 20 capital equity groups investing in oil and gas companies. And there are only probably 5 or 6 now that can raise capital. Because of this, we will be short of oil and gas in the next 2 years, and it will be damaging to the global economy. And Pruitt here is specifically speaking to the smaller oil and gas companies, the independent petroleum producers of America that represent, something like 90% of all the oil and gas produced in the United States comes from these independent producers. And oftentimes they need to borrow or finance their operations, right? You borrow money like you would to build a house, and then you would drill that well, you would produce, and it's not until the well is producing for a period of time that you actually receive revenues back to pay off those notes. Some of your larger companies, or especially the majors, they can self-finance because they just have so much going on, or they're integrated in the pipelines or downstream petrochemical or power generation. So they have different opportunities to generate those cash flows. But some of your pure play startup or smaller independent oil and gas companies just don't have that luxury. And this push, whether it be from the banks to stop being involved with fossil fuels, or the venture equity players, or even the what do they call them? Endowment funds, right? Well, if you read Harvard's endowment report or Stanford's endowment report, they all talk about how they're going net neutral, carbon neutral by 2035, 2050, and they're removing themselves from any sort of investment in oil and gas companies, even though traditionally they have been solid investments for endowment funds like that, right? But now we're because of the wokeness, because of the properness, we're removing ourselves from these investments that have been the cornerstone of many financial institutions. And people think somehow or another by doing all of this, it'll transition us to greener energy faster. Really, as you and I know, it just puts us in a bad position where we have to rely on less supply or foreign entities to generate that revenue or that that supply of oil and natural gas. And really, who benefits from this? No one. At the end of the day, you and I, DC, and everyone listening to the show will have to bear the cost of more expensive energy sources.
Right.
Now, I do want to apologize that I have the landscaper walking by the garage door that I'm recording out of. So there is a little bit of background noise, but DC, I cut you off. I apologize.
No, that's all right. Nobody is going to be able to get together on, you know, this whole move to, you know, let's just move everything and 2030, 2040, 2050, whatever, you know, nobody's going to be able to get together and get this organized. And in the end, it's just going to cost you and I and everybody listening out there. It's just going to cost us a lot more. And it's, you know, it's going to result in shortages and things like that. And it's not the right type of undertaking. It's not really what they should be wasting their energy on.
Another story here. The House Democrats trying to move party on NEPA reform. Despite a Republican House majority, there are some Democrats, including Rep. Scott Peters, who has entered the 118th Congress, emboldened. As members of both parties and chambers restart negotiations on legislation to speed up the permitting process for energy projects, this California lawmaker wants to take on the role of bipartisan dealmaker, leveraging the relationships he has formed across the aisle with the credibility he has earned as an environmental advocate. Peter's steadfast belief in solving the climate crisis will require a reexamination of longstanding environmental regulations, specifically those enshrined by the National Environmental Policy Act of 1970, and that's putting him at odds with the more natural set of allies who consider the NEPA permitting regulation reform sacrosanct. And I think he's seeing, and it's kind of ironic because the last story is talking about how we're trying to dry up funding and basically kill the energy industry. But at the same time, too, one of the things that drag on projects and lead to more financing issues, of course, are these permitting reforms or the permits themselves. And this one in particular, the NEPA permit, is it's interesting that Republicans and Democrats both see it as a negative because whether you're trying to do an energy project that's a fossil fuel related one or if you're trying to do anything in the green space, these permits can from time to time slow down these projects. And it's not in the best interest of anyone, whether we're trying to be in a green economy or a fossil fuel driven economy. So hopefully with some bipartisanship, especially since the House has switch to Republicans, but only by a slight majority, that we can find some opportunities to make these deals, find some common sense opportunities, and of course, move those permitting reforms forward. Going black, not green, curbing U.S. oil and gas production would hurt the environment, the report finds. Environmentalists seeking to halt U.S. and oil and gas production in the name of combating climate change are undermining their own agenda and risking greater damage to the planet, according to a new report from the Institute of Energy Research. Friends of this program, we've hosted Tom Pyle and his team many times. Their report release showed that the U.S. is the most environmentally friendly major energy producer in the world. And they argue that, like it or not, because petroleum products are here to stay, limiting U.S. production would have a devastating effect on the environment. And the report comes as Alaska Republicans and Native leaders are urging the Biden administration, which has committed to complete transition away from fossil fuels, not to kill a major project in their state. And of course, projects that are on federal lands and Native American lands, those areas generate enormous amounts of revenue for the local indigenous people, the local Native people, in the communities in which the oil and gas operations happen. So it's one thing to say we want to be in a green economy, but oftentimes they're missing the point that education, roads, pensions, even the employees of these local governments, county governments, are funded heavily by oil and gas revenues. How the Strategic Petroleum Reserve impacts oil and gas prices. This is another issue that just never seems to go away, and one that we've discussed many times on the program. President Joe Biden has announced another release from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. He said that the recovery from the coronavirus pandemic was increasing demand for gasoline as the world reopened and supply wasn't keeping up. This was back in 2021. The weekly average price for regular gasoline then was $3.40 per gallon, more than a dollar increase from the same time period in 2020. It's always painful when gas prices spike, Biden said then, but the fact is that we always get through these spikes, and we're going to get through this one as well, and hopefully faster. Then he issued a 50 million barrel sale. That was the largest in history. The release happened gradually over time, but more than 3 months later, the average price of gas was still 20 cents higher. And the Biden administration has now announced close to another 30 million barrels to release. We're already closing in on all-time lows in the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. The Strategic Petroleum Reserve was never intended to be a price controller or price manipulator, especially in election years. Where many Republicans are arguing that President Biden is really just using it for political use. And the reality is that the release of this oil, while it might have slowed or impacted short-term pricing, when we stop releasing the oil, the prices continue to go up. And I think it has more to do with the underlying issues that the Biden administration is pushing for more regulation. The Biden administration is very hostile to the oil and gas industry. As we mentioned at the top of the show, the banks and other entities, venture firms, are not investing money into oil and gas companies. So they're not investing money into the ground to drill new wells. So we really just have a fundamental supply and pricing issue where we're just not producing enough supply to meet demand and thus prices going up. Factoring in the world war in Europe, factoring in supply chain issues, logistic issues, that has a lot to do with it. And we can get into the more nuanced points of this in a later conversation. But the real way to solve this problem is to produce more domestic oil and natural gas, allow that oil and gas to make it across the country and into the worldwide market, thus bringing down the overall price of oil and natural gas products across the country. But more importantly, we need to invest in new infrastructure and new refining capacity and new manufacturing capacity. That would be the easiest way to solve these problems. It just takes the longest lead items, of course, being pipelines and new, say, refineries or petrochemical facilities or state-of-the-art manufacturing facilities. I just wish we focused more on building those things. We always talk about how America is back to building things. Well, let's stop building warehouse and distribution centers. Let's start building manufacturing facilities to actually make products that we need every single day. U.S. LNG producers poised to leapfrog rivals with three new projects. At least three proposed U.S. LNG projects have likely found enough customers to receive the financial approvals they need this year. According to calculations and various developments, that would make the country the world's largest exporter once these projects are built and come online. After a number of approvals of plants over the last decades, developers have secured dozens of long-term contracts to finance new multi-billion-dollar LNG plants. The pace of approvals has accelerated as Europe has shifted away from Russian gas since the invasion of Ukraine. And about a dozen developers hope to make final investment decisions or FIDs this year. Many of these projects have been delayed several times over the last few years, but analysts say that at least three of them have secured enough customers to take the next step. Did we not just discuss this in a previous story there, DC? This is the way we solve geopolitical issues. This is the way we solve environmental and climate change issues. This is the way we get America moving again.
Exactly.
All of these can be happened through that.
Right.
U.S. influence on global oil prices growing. It doesn't need to grow. We already had it under the previous administration, under the Trump administration. We were producing so much oil that we were controlling the oil prices around the world. We had kind of wrestled that control away from OPEC Plus. But as this article dives into, it's an opinion piece from Oil Price. Earlier this month, the number of oil swaps linked to oil producers in Texas hit a record. To date, the number of such swaps in total also sits at a record. Later this year, the Wall Street Journal is reporting that a Texas oil grade will be added to the Brent complex of crude contracts. U.S. oil is going places, and during the first shale revolution, there was probably hardly much thought about becoming an oil exporter of crude or becoming an exporter of oil crude. The point at the time was to boost self-sufficiency and really see just how much oil one could get out of those shelly rocks in the Eagle Ford and the Permian. And after the first downturn that bruised the industry quite painfully, producers got smarter. They learned to pump more with fewer expenses, and the second shale boom unfolded. And even the biggest isolationists in Washington realized that the U.S. could once again become a net exporter of oil. The oil export ban was lifted and the American crude began traveling the world. The emphasis, of course, of this story is that we don't need to slow down. We're not running out of oil. The demand for oil in this country continues to grow. The demand for it worldwide continues to grow. Even as we push for the green energy economy, the future economy, all of that is still driven by oil. Even if the energy source, even if the electricity or the heat isn't generated from fossil fuels, oils, or natural gases. So many of the products you need to make windmills, you need to build solar panels, hydroelectric dams, nuclear, whatever the energy source may be, need to be derived from fossil fuels, as we know. $640 billion investment needed in upstream oil and gas sector by 2030. This is a new report saying that the annual upstream oil and gas investment needs to rise about 28% to reach $640 billion by 2030 to ensure adequate global supplies. This is what we're talking about. Efforts to force the transition, slow down the transition, stop the transition are only going to lead to bigger impacts to our bottom line, our wallets, DC. And that's what these folks are saying, is that capital expenditures, while they are rising in the year 2022 and 2023 from previous years, are not keeping up with where they need to be, which is actually at the pre-pandemic levels. And inflation is eating away at that spending, supply chain issues, workforce issues, and the overall removal of new wells from schedules each year to try and balance what available capital they have against the market needs in the midst of all these problems is not setting us up to be in a good spot come 2030. The opportunity exists to correct that. There could be more emphasis on investing. There could be the old olive branch extended from the federal government that suggests, hey, let's move forward together and work on a strategy together. We're just not seeing that right now from this administration. And maybe they'll change their tune, especially now that Congress is split and part of it's going in a different direction. But who knows? We're also coming up in 2 years on another presidential election. Does the American people reelect Joe Biden or another member of the Democratic Party that continues down this trend? Or does it pivot and bring in a Republican that has a different position on energy development? I don't know. But all I know is we have approximately, 7 years left till 2030. And if this report holds true, we will not spend enough money to develop the resources we need. and thus the energy we need every day will become more expensive, and nobody wants to see that. Shell sees U.S. LNG playing outsized role in global natural gas markets. This goes in line with the story we just discussed. Large majors like Shell see the U.S. natural gas market growing and having greater impact on global LNG trade in the future, especially as more projects are built and the world supply contracts are increasingly tied to the Henry Hub. The Henry Hub, of course, is our national average for natural gas. Shell reports that in its annual liquefied natural gas outlook that Qatar and the United States are expected to drive the bulk of supply additions to the decade, with new offtake agreements likely being tied to Henry Hub and crude oil prices. The United States is in such an influential position, we should embrace that.
We should be the drivers of the worldwide energy market, especially as it relates to natural gas. We should be the price setters. We should be the ones that are setting the environmental standards and the social standards. We should not rely on other countries to produce the energy that we need and set the price while producing energy that is not environmentally friendly and otherwise just devastating to, you know, populations. We should own that, especially since we have more than enough energy in this country to do that for decades, if not centuries, to come. So with that being said, why don't we throw it over to Fender's Fast Facts. What do you have for us, Rusty?
Thank you, Bill and DC. And Monday, which would be the 20th of February, back in 2003, so exactly 20 years ago, one of the deadliest nightclub fires in the country, and of course it's music related, you'll remember this, DC, the Great White Fire at the Station Nightclub, in Warwick, Rhode Island, 100 dead, 200 injured. Fireworks ignited the flammable sound insulation during a show by the rock band Great White and engulfed the club with smoke and flames. I'll tell you, I figured everybody in the world would be trying to get, I can't remember his name, but I had him on the Oldies show, the Saturday Night Live, the Oldies at the time. And I figured he'd never, you know, immediately after that, I just really wanted to talk about the music. It was bad timing. And I never figured that he would, he'd ever agree to an interview, but he did. And I didn't touch on the station. You know, it wasn't his fault, you know, right. But he'll be forever remembered for that tragedy in Warwick, Rhode Island. But a very nice guy.
Yeah, I talked to the guys when I was, interviewing them for my afternoon show. I talked to a couple of the guys from Great White. And I mean, it was several years later. It was like 2013 or 14. So, I mean, that wasn't even a thing in the conversation. We just moved past that because they were doing a show here.
Yeah. And the same deal with me. It wasn't like the next day because, I wouldn't do something. It was like 6 or 7 months later. And I just kind of blew right by that. You know, I didn't even mention that. It's just one of those tragedies. You know what I mean? But I'm glad that he was a cool guy and agreed because if I were in the same predicament, I don't know if I'd want to talk to anybody for a long time. You know what I mean?
Sure. Of course.
So, DC, we look back at some of the unfortunately, some of the tragic nightclub fires that disrupted things here in the United States. Of course, that was in the top five, unfortunately. March 25th, 1990, not that long ago, 33 years, the Happyland nightclub in New York. I was still working in New York at that time. I remember that very, very well. It was in the Bronx, 87 dead. A disgruntled ex-boyfriend doused the club and the doorway with gasoline while his ex-girlfriend was inside. Then he pulled his pickup truck up against the doors to block the only way out.
Jeez.
Man, you gotta drop a guy like that on like some deserted island.
Yeah. Seriously.
March 25th, 1990. That's really unbelievable. May 28th, 1977, the Beverly Hills Supper Club in Southgate, Kentucky. I remember this very well. 165 dead, more than 200 injured. A Memorial Day fire broke out in an overcrowded club. June 30th, 1974, Gulliver's Nightclub in Port Chester, New York. That's on the North Shore of Long Island. 24 dead. An arsonist set the club on fire in an attempt to cover up a burglary in which he ransacked vending machines at a next door bowling alley. That's always nice, isn't it? June 24th, 1973, the Upstairs Lounge in New Orleans. 32 dead. Still an unsolved arson attack on a gay bar, the worst attack on a United States gay bar until the Orlando shooting massacre in June. left 49 people dead. And going way back to November 28th, Thanksgiving week, 1942, the Coconut Grove in Boston, 492 dead, the deadliest nightclub in history. The tragedy at one of the top clubs in the post-prohibition era prompted increased safety standards at bars. After that, the Coconut Grove in Boston. Wow. And with all these nightclub fires, what is the main cause, the main reason why so many people die in these fires?
The main reason. Let's see. So I'm sure if you're taking the, like, what was the technical cause of the fire, or why did so many people die?
Like a combination of both, actually. Why do so many people die in nightclub fires? Like, they don't die in malls that easily or movie theater, you know?
Right. It's, let's see. I'm going with this. Is probably, you get multiple choice questions. I'll give you multiple answers. I think it's really dark in those places, so it's tough to see around. And there are not, I would say, not enough exits, or the exits are not clearly marked.
Yep, absolutely. It's a combination of safety standards and overcrowding, mainly safety standards. Exits aren't marked. There's only one or two ways in and out, and it's extremely dark, and the panic just ensues. You know, you get a little bit of smoke, and you don't know what's going on in these places. Yep. And you may think it's part of the show in some of these places, you know, with pyrotechnics and all that. So you're absolutely right. Once again, overcrowding, but more importantly, safety standards that led in the 1970s, the late 70s, to installing sprinkler systems in most of the places. So, unfortunately, I look back at some of the tragic nightclub fires in United States history this week, DC.
There you go. That is Fender's Fast Facts here on the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and I'm DC Taylor. Please stay here for more.
You've probably heard a lot about natural gas and how it's helping to bolster America's long-term energy security. But did you know that the Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania is home to an abundance of natural gas? This formation is the second largest natural gas field in the world, and the reason why Coterra Energy is investing billions of dollars in the production of this valuable resource. By doing so, we're helping America become a world leader in energy production. We're also helping to generate a stronger local economy by creating hundreds of thousands of jobs and paying millions in taxes and royalties to landowners, farmers, and dairy producers. Clean-burning American natural gas also helps our country reduce energy costs, improves air quality, and protects the environment. Here's to securing our nation's energy future and creating economic prosperity for today's farmers and the generations that follow. Coterra Energy, responsibly producing clean energy for all.
Yeah, the benefits are very good. The benefits are all day one here. The dental health, vision, everything is top notch. Everything is very good.
Drivers wanted.
The 401k plan. We have a 6% matching program. The medical, there's a health spending account, and you could use that for co-pays. You could use that for prescription drugs. You could use that for anything just to help along with deductibles. And then you could put in from your paycheck, it's tax exempt. You could put in so much bi-weekly, and then that helps out too, because it is before taxes. So.
If you're looking for steady year-round work with a company that cares about you and your family, at GDS, you will drive locally and be home after every shift. Get all the details and advance your career with GDS, a division of Cabot Oil and Gas, where you'll drive the newest fleet on the road.
The steady schedule, the 4-2 schedule for a driver, a 4-2 schedule is great.
Gas Search Drilling Services. Get the phone number at gassearchdrilling.com.
It's always a good time for Greenlee's Barbecue.
For all your meat-eating needs.
Pulled pork, ribs, brisket, chicken thighs, grilled chicken planks, ribeye steaks, salmon burgers, and beef burgers, plus salads and side dishes delivered or for catering at your weddings, company parties, and other crazy soirees, you crazy kids. GreenleesBBQ.com. Greenlee's Barbecue, Route 6, Tunkhannock. Look for the school bus next to Keystone Truck Caps. Greenlee's Barbecue. Oh,
Linde Corporation is a pipeline and infrastructure company, and Linde is proud to work in the Marcellus region, towns and cities, and beyond. Apply at lindeco.com. And remember, if Lindy wasn't hiring yesterday, chances are we will be hiring tomorrow.
Are you a truck driver looking to earn $1,000 to $2,100 a week with full benefits? Well, Eastern Freight Systems and Tunkhannock are seeking local, regional, and OTR drivers. They even have an oil field division with lanes based in both Tunkhannock and Pittston, PA. They're looking for motivated drivers who are looking to earn good money to join their team. A clean MVR with professional driver training or experience are required. Come join the growing team at Eastern Freight Systems by calling 570-836-8050.
Welcome back to the Shale Gas News. I'm DC Taylor, along with Bill DeRozier and Rusty Fender. Here's a replay of some top news stories out of the energy industries from a few weeks ago. Here's Bill.
This is the Shale Gas News, a show dedicated to helping you understand why energy matters in our lives and why we need to make informed energy decisions. A couple of news stories I'd like to share today. Energy experts say the U.S. is behind Europe, but energy crises could happen here. Cowboy State Daily is reporting that a continued increase in wind and solar on the U.S. electric grid has strained energy resources during extreme weather events, according to grid reliability assessments. But fossil fuel-powered resources have prevented the kinds of problems sweeping across Europe this winter. As Germany has done in the past few months, the United Kingdom is bringing coal plants back online and even offering money to citizens to cut down on their energy use because wind energy resources just aren't providing enough power. Rick Wetbeck, Alaska State Director for Power the Future, a not-for-profit pro-energy organization, told Cowboy State Daily this week that the United Kingdom's power company should be held accountable for failing to provide a reliable grid and for throwing money at the customers to get them to reduce their demand. It's something we talk about on this show at length, ad nauseum.
You know, we are lucky to be part of the PJM grid where we live in Pennsylvania, just because of the reliability, the affordability, and the accessibility of energy that we have regularly. PJM continually produces more power and supplies that to other neighboring states and other grids. And it just puts us in a great position whenever we have these weather events. And I think it can be used as an example of how an energy policy should be adopted, not only here in the United States across the board, but in other countries across the world. One of the driving forces behind PJM is reliable energy derived from natural gas, coal, and nuclear. And what the balance of those three energy sources gives you is reliability, accessibility, and flexibility. Coal and natural gas can be revved up. They can be turned on. They're reliable whether the snow or the wind are coming. And nuclear has become really a good, solid, steady state, a foundational energy source. Doesn't really go up, doesn't really go down in terms of its production. But what we have is that steady supply of energy. Other places around the country, and Texas is a prime example, we saw it a couple of years ago, have overbuilt and over-relied on solar and wind, especially down there in Texas. And you think of that, that's kind of ironic because it's the, you know, oil and gas capital of the world. But you look to a place like Europe that really went all in on renewables in solar and wind. And outside of, let's say, large hydro, which is very reliable, the solar and wind are intermittent. And when solar dies down, it leaves you in a dangerous spot if you don't have backup energy sources. And this article is discussing that because places like Germany and the United Kingdom are constantly having to bring back online the coal plants that they have worked so hard to shut down. What's the solution here? We've discussed this over and over again. Continue building out natural gas power plants. They're affordable. They're easy to build out. You can build large ones like Invenergy or Moxie Freedom. You can build small ones like the IMG power plants, which are rural distributed 20 megawatt units that can be turned on in 10, 15 minutes time and shut down even quicker so they can meet the demands of the energy grid, especially when the intermittent sources like solar and wind fail. So it should be a wake-up call, but we've been doing this show for how many years now, DC? And we continually talk about this issue over and over again.
Right.
And hopefully, whether it be the demands that have been placed on us because of COVID, inflation and supply chain issues, the war in Europe, people wake up and say, we need to invest more in United States oil and natural gas, the infrastructure to move that to market, and then the infrastructure to convert that into the resources we need, whether it's power, consumer supplies, medical supplies, fertilizer. It's the feedstock of our lives. We shouldn't vilify it, and we should continue to expand it. Seems pretty common sense, right, DC?
Of course, yeah. Going to have a variety of ways to get our energy, so we're not, you know, the eggs in one basket thing, you know, cliche, but you know that's what, so, you know, a lot of places are doing, and it's not good, it's not practical.
Exactly, and I didn't really address this whole thing, but the article also discusses how utility companies are throwing money at consumers to turn down their energy needs. First off, our populations continue to grow, our need for energy continues to grow, and that shouldn't be a negative. We should find ways to be more efficient and produce affordable energy. But just the idea that a utility company that already charges us so much money would turn around and then offer that money back to us to turn down our energy? Well, then why are you collecting that much money to begin with, DC?
Right, exactly.
I'm sure people would rather have that money right now in a high inflationary period.
Yeah.
Republicans launched newest fight against the Biden administration's oil drawdowns. Republicans are aiming to neutralize one of the main tools of President Joe Biden's arsenal to lower gasoline prices. He used it especially before last year's election. His prolific release of oil from the nation's Strategic Petroleum Reserve has lowered our stockpiles to the lowest seen in decades. And of course, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve is originally designed to be a large reserve of oil and other oil products, specifically to assist the United States during periods of weather, war, natural disaster, and or support our allies around the world. What it was not designed to be was a price manipulative tool wielded by whoever controls the White House leading into elections to try and control the price of gas at the pumps, especially when that same administration has been doing a lot, everything in their power just about, to try and force us to transition to electric vehicles and to reduce our reliance on oil and natural gas through regulatory changes, through trying to block sales of auctions of land and just not being very friendly to the oil and natural gas industry. So what the Republicans are trying to do is prevent President Biden and presidents in the future from being able to wield it as a political tool, which it was never intended to be. And I do agree with that. I don't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat. It should not be something that they can just use willy-nilly whenever they need to influence public opinions, especially when the answer is so simple. Have the oil and gas industry produce more here domestically, remove the roadblocks, extend the olive branch, work hand in hand to build the infrastructure that we need.
Right.
U.S. natural gas falls below $3 for the first time since May 2021. We've always talked about this, DC. It's a cycle up and down, whether it's natural gas, gasoline prices, or oil. U.S. natural gas futures extended declines below $3 amid a mild winter, which has really only sparked more of a sell-off among the country's commodities. Gas delivery has hit as low as $2.85 across different exchanges, including the New York Mercantile Exchange. So 2021. So again, I look back to it. Over the last year, the oil and gas industry has received a lot of criticism for bringing in record profits, and they're greedy and they're corporate profiteers stealing from you and I, DC. But keep in mind, prior to 2021, 2019, those years, the price of natural gas was below $3. And in some cases, it was below $2. And those companies were struggling, pinching pennies, making costs, you know, being very responsible, or some were being irresponsible with the handling of money. But the reality was nobody was calling on them then or shedding light on the fact that they weren't having record profits then. So it's a double-edged sword. The energy industry goes up and down, but the reality is this. We all are in a much better place when the energy industry is making money so that it can continue to invest in infrastructure, new resources, and the supply chain and workforce. I'd much rather be in a world where we're all employed working to expand the energy industry versus a time when the energy industry is slowing down, prices are, you know, struggling, and they can't make those investments. Because keep in mind, the oil and gas industry are a main component of our economy. So many things are derived from oil and natural gas. And if we fail to produce that oil and natural gas affordably, abundant, and accessibly, then the rest of the economy feels those negative impacts.
Right.
And I, for one, am tired of paying, what is it, $6-$7 now for a dozen eggs? You know, milk's up, everything's up. It's just so expensive. I can't go to the grocery store without spending $100, and I don't even know what I get at the grocery store anymore.
Yeah, carry like two plastic bags full of stuff out of there, and you're pushing $100. Yeah.
I got a 3-year-old. She eats a lot, right? Yeah. You know, I got mouths to feed now. I feel like a mama bird going out and like trying to find the worm to bring back and everything.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, man. Biden administration's oil and gas drilling approvals outpace Trump's, according to, I don't know if I believe that, the Center for Biological Diversity. Federal data shows that the Biden administration has approved 6,000 permits for oil and gas drilling on public lands. That has outpaced the Trump administration's permits by 100 or 200, according to this calculation. The Biden administration's policy on fossil fuel expansion contradicts the clear climate science that fossil fuel growth must be stopped and governments must phase out fossil fuels. I'm starting to pick up that this article might be a little biased. You know, was it lies, damn lies, and statistics, DC?
Right.
Because I also think, and even if these numbers are true or accurate, they also forget that during the Trump administration, he was being sued by every environmental group, leftist, everything that they could to stop him from developing oil and natural gas, too. So I think there's two sides to every story. Oil and gas industry mergers dropped 13% during 2022. Forbes reports that in its annual report detailing activity among mergers and acquisitions, or M&A, for the upstream sector, the oil and gas industry saw a significant decline during 2022. They also released data that there was only about 160 deals totaling $58 billion for the calendar year, with just 26 transactions totaling $13 billion coming in the fourth quarter. Overall, the analysts say that the average deal value fell by about 20%. And that's interesting because I expected to see more of that. Maybe that'll happen as prices come back down and companies who had to take on more debt find themselves having to make difficult decisions. So it'll be interesting to see what 2023 looks like in that regard. Manchin bill slaps back at Biden in the EV tax credit fight. E&E News is reporting that the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Chair Joe Manchin took another swipe at the Biden administration Wednesday, releasing legislation that would stop the Treasury Department from issuing subsidies for consumer electric vehicles that don't comply with strict sourcing requirements for batteries and battery minerals. The West Virginia Democrat brought out the American Vehicle Security Act of 2023, a bill that would bar automakers from making an end-around sourcing requirements under the newly minted Inflation Reduction Act, or IRA. Moreover, Manchin's office suggested Tuesday that the bill would force some EV buyers who got a tax credit to return the money. It is interesting. We've covered this on the show before, the idea of, okay, if you're going to force the country to move to the green economy, to electric vehicles, to solar and wind, why aren't there requirements that they have to source all that stuff from the United States? We have ways to develop those minerals. We have ways to build these products. Yet most of these products, or the feedstocks for the products, are coming from overseas, especially from countries that aren't particularly in line with our values and our ideals. So I'm a big proponent of forcing countries to do that. Now, one of the reasons people say, well, it's just too expensive to build those products here in the United States, or we would have to open up mines to get at lithium and cobalt to build these products. So people are fine with out of sight, out of mind, third world countries often using slave or child labor to develop these products and ship them here to the United States. So we feel good about using them instead of, you know, sourcing them under the same standards that we hold all other industries to, an industry just like the oil and gas industry, which we've discussed here, meets some of the strictest, actually, I'm going to say it, the strictest standards in the world when it comes to developing resources. So again, we should be developing more of our homegrown resources, whether they're fossil fuels or alternative energies, products, things like that, and shipping them to the world, because the world will improve both from an environmental and climate standpoint, but from a social economic standpoint, if we are the producers of these products. And I stand by that.
That again, a replay of a few stories we featured here on the Shale Gas News a few weeks ago. And I'm DC Taylor, along with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender. And coming up in just a couple of minutes, we will do the top five stories of the week and the jobs segment in case you're seeking a career in the energy industry. Stay here for more of the Shale Gas News.
You've probably heard a lot about natural gas and how it's helping to bolster America's long-term energy security. But did you know that the Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania is home to an abundance of natural gas? This formation is the second largest natural gas field in the world, and the reason why Coterra Energy is investing billions of dollars in the production of this valuable resource. By doing so, we're helping America become a world leader in energy production. We're also helping to generate a stronger local economy by creating hundreds of thousands of jobs and paying millions in taxes and royalties to landowners, farmers, and dairy producers. Clean-burning American natural gas also helps our country reduce energy costs, improves air quality, and protects the environment. Here's to securing our nation's energy future and creating economic prosperity for today's farmers and the generations that follow. Coterra Energy, responsibly producing clean energy for all.
Are you looking for work in the gas industry? Lindy Corporation is always looking for good people. Apply at lindyco.com. Lindy installs water lines, sewer lines, and gas lines. We're busy in the Marcellus region. Apply for your next career at lindyco.com.
Why choose Lackawanna College? Lackawanna College can give you the start you need. Spend 2 years earning your degree and go right to work earning a great salary. With 29 degree programs in competitive industries like culinary and hospitality management, petroleum and natural gas, and sonography, Lackawanna College can help you find your future. Visit lackawanna.edu for more information on how to apply or contact the admissions office at 570-961-7814. Why choose Lackawanna College? If you're looking to get ahead in your career or start a new one, Lackawanna College's Continuing Education Department offers a wide variety of certificate programs that are highly affordable and can help you get back to work quickly. Specialized training for workforce development and allied health careers is available, as well as the Lackawanna College Police Academy and the EMS Academy. Call 570-961-7813 for more information or visit lackawanna.edu. Find your future at Lackawanna College.
Environmental protection affects you no matter what industry you serve. Oso Wash provides the only certified clean solution you should trust for your vehicles. Oso is the only certified oil and gas industry clean tank washing facility in Northeast PA that's available 7 days a week. If it could get dirty, Oso can clean it. They're about 6 miles north of Tunkhannock off of Route 29 on Aldovan Road. 570-996-WASH and find them on Facebook. They are Oso Wash.
Welcome back to the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier and Rusty Fender. And I'm DC Taylor. The job segment coming up in just a few minutes. See what kind of careers we got out there in the energy industries. But first, this, the top five most read stories on MarcellusDrilling.com over the past week. It's Marcellus Drilling News. Each weekday, they locate and share news from the Marcellus and Utica Shale. Over 50,000 people read MDN each month, so we use it as a barometer. Tell us which stories people find the most interesting. MDN editor Jim Willis compiles a list of the top stories each week. So here you go, a summary of the top five most read stories on MDN over the past 7 days. Coming in at number five last week, FERC issues positive final EIS for OVCX pipe project in Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Ohio. In February of last year, Equitrans Midstream announced it had filed a new pipeline expansion project with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC, called the Ohio Valley Connector Expansion Project, or OVCX. The $160 million project will add compression along Equitrans pipelines in Pennsylvania, Ohio, and West Virginia that allow the company to flow an extra 350 million cubic feet a day of natural gas. It appears OVCX is Equitrans's plan B if the ultimate horror happens and Mountain Valley Pipeline can't be completed. FERC issued a final environmental impact statement, EIS, last week, a couple weeks ago, signaling the agency will soon vote to issue a certificate for the project to get built. OVCX will add pipeline connections to the Rockies Express Pipeline, REX, and Rover Pipeline in Clarington, Ohio. OVCX will also boost reliability to other pipelines, including Enbridge's Texas Eastern Transmission, TETCO, Columbia Gas Transmission, and Eastern Gas Transmission and Storage. Most of the investment for OVCX, approximately $130 million, will go toward adding new compressors at three existing compressor stations in Greene County, Pennsylvania, Wetzel County, West Virginia, and Monroe County, Ohio. Rusty?
Number four, DC, the FERC Chairman Phillips surprises and moves to quickly advance three gas pipes. Now, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, under the chairmanship of Richard Glick, moved like molasses when it came to approving new pipeline projects. Glick's favorite move was to require a full environmental impact statement, an EIS, for even small projects that do nothing more than add more compressors or looping pipe laid next to the already existing pipe. So Glick is now gone thanks to Senator Joe Manchin. Willie Phillips is the acting chairman. In a surprise move, Phillips has converted what would have been full EISs for three small but important pipeline projects, all of them affecting the Marcellus Utica, into much faster and less onerous environmental assessments, shaving a full 9 months off the time it takes to approve these projects. What are the three pipeline projects that get the new streamlined EA instead of a full environmental study? Well, number one is Transcontinental Gas Pipeline's 150,000, that's a billion ton per day, Southeast Energy Connectors Project, and then Transco's 364,400 direct terminal today, Texas to Louisiana's Energy Pathway Project. One more, Texas's Eastern's 55,000 direct terminal today, Appalachia to Market Number 2, and Entrecon HP Replacement. So all three in the bonus projects will carry Marcellus Utica molecules.
Coming in at number three last week, the third most popular story over the past week at MarcellusDrilling.com, Ohio Court of Appeals upholds depth severance clause in shale lease. The Ohio Court of Appeals recently issued a decision in a case involving lease language about a, quote, depth severance clause that is very important for both landowners and drillers to know about. In Terra LLC versus Rice Drilling D LLC et al., a landowner in Belmont County, Ohio, signed a lease with language that leases both the Marcellus and Utica shale layers, but all other formations were, quote, reserved to the lessor, i.e. the landowner. However, the driller, Rice, now EQT, drilled into and produced hydrocarbons from the Point Pleasant layer that sits immediately below the Utica. According to the lease and the decision by the court, that was a no-no. Rusty?
Number two, DC, five reasons why the price of natural gas may be ready to bounce higher. As we reported recently, the price of natural gas continues to bump along in the mid $2 per multi-million British thermal unit range. So warm weather, both here and in Europe, along with a slight increase in production, that's actually 5% higher now than it was a year ago, have combined to deliver low commodity prices for natural gas. However, a Zacks analyst writes that even though natural gas is beaten down, we may be on the cusp of a multi-week rally in the price. He lists five signs and reasons why natural gas prices are due to turn around. This, the Post, of course, on Marcellus Drilling supports those reasons.
All right, here you go. The number one most popular story on MDN over the past week. Fake bomb found at Nat Gas Transmission Facility in southwestern Pennsylvania. A few weeks ago, a suspicious item was found at a natural gas transmission facility in Fallowfield Township in Washington County, Pennsylvania. It looked like a bomb, an improvised homemade device, what they call it, and was placed into the door of an industrial pipe at the Eastern Gas Transmission Facility. The Pennsylvania State Police and FBI responded to investigate. They later determined it was not explosive and they removed it, but it certainly looked like it was explosive. In other words, a bomb, which is why they responded. The investigation continues, and so far everyone is tight-lipped about it. We'll be interested to see what the investigators find, who placed it there, and why. And there you go, the top five stories thousands of you read this past week on MDN. If you'd like to keep track of the latest Marcellus and Utica news each day, it's easy. Just subscribe to Marcellus Drilling News. Go to marcellusdrilling.com and click on the subscribe link. It's only $7.95 a month or $79.50 for the year. Now it's time to check out the jobs, the careers. You looking to get a career in the energy industries? Here's the latest, brought to us by Lackawanna College and their School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Rusty?
Thank you, DC. And we'll start in Pennsylvania, of course. BlackRock Resources, looking for a distribution gas pipeline systems engineering technician. It's going to be level one or two. It's based in Wexford. Talon Energy, who runs the Berwick Nuclear Power Plant in Salem Township, looking for a production shift supervisor out of Bangor. That's Northampton County. TRC looking for an ecologist and a project manager for emissions testing. That's remote in Pittsburgh, based in Monroeville, one of the suburbs. Hydro Recovery and opening for a water transfer technician based in Claremont. GDS looking for roustabouts, 10 positions, headquartered in Montrose. Same deal with Penn Hills Resources, 10 roustabouts, general labor needed out of Kane, Pennsylvania. UGI, an opening for a natural gas construction and maintenance laborer based in Lancaster. Black and Veatch, looking for a process engineer for their liquid natural gas, oil and gas unit. It's out of Harrisburg. Oil States Energy Services, an administrative assistant based in Towanda. And PP&L just posted an opening for an engineer and a support engineer, both of those remote in Allentown. Moving to Ohio, Arterra, an opening for a foreman for their natural gas construction division. That's out of Toledo. Summit Midstream Partners, a measurement technician out of Jacobsburg. S2W Contracting just posted an experienced gas compressor mechanic out of St. Clairsville. Amtech Oil, A-M-T-E-K, Amtech, looking for an oil and gas production and operations manager headquartered in Cambridge. Encino Energy, a measurement technician that's out of Carrollton. Duke Energy, an opening for an executive assistant, level one out of Cincinnati. American Electric Power, looking for a meter servicer out of Coshocton. And Nine Energy Services, an opening for a wireline operator that'll be based in Marietta. In the Mountain State, West Virginia, Hope Gas, looking for a senior gas pipeline integrity specialist that'll be based in Clarksburg. Team Fischel, opening for a supervisor for the natural gas distribution system. It's out of Charleston. Keystone Clearwater Solutions, they have a job posted for a water transfer technician that'll be out of Wheeling. American Electric Power, looking for an equipment operator out of Winfield. Shale Pro Energy Services, looking for a well tender out of New Martinsville. KLX Energy Services just posted a field technician job that'll be based in Bridgeport. TC Energy, looking for a repairman for their gas operations unit out of Matthias. And also a heavy equipment operator based in Cameron. That is a traveling position, however, both for TC Energy. And Empower Resources, an environmental specialist job, it's out of Fayetteville. Got a couple in New York State, the Lindy Corporation, looking for an electrical engineer out of Niagara Falls, Con Ed, an opening for a general utility worker out of Astoria, Queens. Gas field specialist, a hydrostatic tester and technician out of Horseheads. It's the Binghamton, Elmira area. NYSEG, New York State Electric and Gas, a supervisor for the construction and maintenance unit that's out of Oneonta. And then a load engineer out of electric distribution systems that'll be based in Vestal. And Kinder Morgan, an opening for a pipeline crew leader out of Guilderland Center, New York. And those are the jobs, as DC mentioned, this week's sponsor by Lackawanna College, the School of Petroleum and Natural Gas, Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. We'll see you next week, same time, same radio stations. From Bill DeRosier, DC Taylor, I'm Rusty Fenger. Thanks once again for listening to Shale Gas News.